There's another situation in which, as plugged in as you may be day to day, you might be short on information. Vital information. Life-saving information. During a natural disaster or civil conflict, critical information can be hard to come by. But as the tweets and Facebook feeds coming out of the Arab Spring proved, even if the phone lines are down and the power is out, smartphones and the right kind of web platforms can be a powerful combination. Ushahidi is a suite of open-source software that allows people to send and receive that kind of information via text message. David Kobia is one of Ushahidi's founders. He told me how it got started.
Ushahidi was born out of the post-election violence in Kenya in early 2008. There was a media blackout in Kenya right after a contentious election, and no radio, no TV, no newspapers. The one thing that was open is the internet, really. So a group of us, really all bloggers, connected in one way or another to Kenya, came together to, on one weekend, come up with a platform where people could send in reports of things they were seeing, violence, police brutality. So in one weekend, it ended up being a simple mashup, really, and reports started streaming in via text message, which is really a really powerful device everyone had.
I think what surprises people outside of that kind of situation is that the internet would be open and that mobile phones would be open so that people would have access to it. I mean, you said there was no TV, no radio, no print. Clearly, there was an attempt to keep people from getting information, and yet there's this wide open highway.
Maybe it's a factor of, a lot of governments being slightly naive to the power of the internet at the time. Obviously in 2012, things might be a little bit different.
So tell me what the name means, Ushahidi.
Ushahidi means witness.
Witness is exactly what you're about.
Precisely. It is about witnessing. It is about the everyday person telling stories of what they see, telling their own version of the story.
So you and your colleagues, your friends, put together a website at the time in 2008 to gather all of these reports that were coming in of violence. How did people discover you were there and collecting this information?
Well, all of us being bloggers, really, we had a pretty good readership just between the four of us. It was easy for us to promote our efforts via our blogs. So that was the beginning. And then, of course, mainstream media picked up on it at some point. And then from there, just things really escalated.
Yeah. What kind of reports were coming in?
Reports like burned house, burned car, policeman, attacks boy. Mostly reports of violence, more than anything.
And they were coming from all over. People were calling you using Twitter, using Facebook, I suppose, to some
Actually,
extent.
At the time, it was not even really prevalent social media that exists today. It was text messages. We had a short code number, 4-digit number that people could send text messages to. So once word of this phone number got out, it really began to escalate. And with efforts of folks in the diaspora sending text messages back to people in Kenya, this number that you could report to, people learned more about it.
I can imagine, though, that once it began to be of interest to people, you must have been almost overwhelmed by the amount of information that you were receiving.
Yes. I mean, truthfully, it was a little surprising. We didn't know that it would be this big. Again, this was a weekend effort. But it was good to be overwhelmed. It meant that people really wanted to share something.
But at the same time, then, that's exactly what Ushahidi was built to handle. You may not have known it that first weekend, but what Ushahidi does, as I understand it, is to use an open source software method to gather all that information and process it so that everybody can see what's going on.
Precisely. We built a free and open source platform. It has been translated to almost 20 languages and been used in almost a little over 100 countries. It's a really good way to surface crowdsourced information.
Was there a moment when you were working on this, when it began to occur to you that this would be valuable beyond Kenya?
While we worked on it at the time, we thought we really would go back to our day jobs. Then we got a call from some people in South Africa who were dealing with xenophobic violence. I think this was right around March, April of 2008, and they asked for something similar. And then we began to realize, and then with requests from other people, that there was a need for something like this. People needed to be able to tell their stories somehow, some way.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how it's been used. You said it was used in Kenya. That was your origination. And then
yes,
to South Africa. In fact, now, as I understand, it's being used to track violence in Syria. So in some ways, a similar situation, sort of technologically advanced, but given the violence, hard to keep track of.
Yes. So like in Syria, for instance, you know, of course, they're using a combination of Twitter, email, phone. There's even what they call speak-to-tweet phone number that you can call to send your text message. That is actually a courtesy of Google. So instead of actually having to get on the internet, you can call a number and your voice will be heard on Twitter. The platform itself, I mean, the Syria deployment has, you know, aggregated over 1,500 reports, actually documented over 1,000 individuals killed. And all this is via crowdsourced information, of course.
Well, I was just thinking about you four friends in Kenya who came together one weekend and said, we need to get all of this together. In some ways, you could see four friends getting together in a suburb of Damascus and saying, we need to be able to present this information. The difference being that they know about Ushahidi and can start there.
Actually, right at the beginning when we embarked on the effort to build this software, you know, like really build it out, that we went by that mantra, which is basically make it easier for people to do what we did. You know, basically, here's what you need. You're, again, like you said, four similar people to us, but you don't have to spend time, you know, coding it out. Or we have documented all the processes. So here, take this and run with it.
And it's not just parts of the world where there is civil war. This was used to help coordinate relief after the earthquake in Haiti, wasn't it?
Yes. The effort in Haiti actually validated a lot of thinking around crowdsourcing a crisis. There are actually quite a few groups involved working with the telcos in Haiti, you know, the U.S. State Department, their first responders and whatnot. But the way it worked was the telcos sent a four-digit number to all their subscribers and said, if you need help, this is where you should text it to. Our system aggregated over 45,000 text messages. These text messages were translated by the Haitians in the diaspora, mapped out and immediately sent back to first responders, closing that loop of, you know, request for help and the response to it within a very short time frame.
So what would a map look like in Haiti that had aggregated all of this information and had it translated and put it back so that people could use it? Is it color-coded? Are there links that show you there's fire in this area, there is too much physical damage in another area?
Yes, it was broken down into, you know, over 20 different, very specific categories. You know, anything from someone just needs water to someone is trapped under rubble, or just different needs, all very specifically categorized. You know, this made it, again, very easy for first responders.
And, of course, it isn't necessary for you to have the latest technology. You don't have to have an Android or an iPhone in order to process this information. In fact, giving the information can be as simple as using a cell phone.
Yes, and I think that's why this took off in Kenya. I think in Africa, we have a penetration of over 70% of mobile, of people with cell phones. That's almost 700 million people with cell phones. They might not be smartphones, but they're cell phones that can send text messages. It is a very powerful tool that's on everyone's hip.
Al Jazeera is now involved in using Ushahidi, I understand. They've helped build a project called Somalia Speaks.
Yes, they really just were reaching out to people in Somalia and asking how the conflict had affected their lives. It was a very simple question, and they said, you know, here's a number to text. The messages were translated and mapped, and when you look at it, it has over 2,000 events all over the country of Somalia.
Has there been, to your knowledge, any effort to subvert this? You could, I suppose, suffer from false reports.
Yes, the efforts to subvert it, the efforts to poison the data. You know, sometimes if you have enough crowdsourced information, it validates itself by having similar reports from multiple reliable sources. It usually depends on the sensitivity of the situation. In Syria, it would be very sensitive, whereas the Washington Post, with snow cleaning efforts around Washington, D.C., it might not be as important to really verify each and every report. There is a difference in how you look at each situation. But yes, there are definitely efforts to try to subvert. And governments don't like these type of mechanisms, for sure.
This does raise the issue of how it is used. It is not just for violence-torn countries. It can be used for election monitoring. It's been used, I gather, for helping poor farmers get fair market prices for their goods. It's not just about crisis and violence, in other words.
Not at all. I think, you know, crisis and violence actually motivates the crowd to participate, right? To try to get this digital front seat to an event happening somewhere in the world. But no, it's... It has been, you know, like I said, different mainstream media companies have used Ushahidi, like mapping corruption and mapping potholes.
You said that governments don't like platforms like this very much. Why is that, do you think?
I think even in democratic countries, there is an effort to control the conversation, which is why even here they're jumping on all the social media. When they see things like Twitter and Facebook and people having these conversations and them, these conversations moving from small to really huge, and these are the people that vote for them, then it starts to become a real problem, I think, because they don't have control. People can participate somehow, you know, that it's not a one-way conversation. Everyone is sitting there and watching and listening, and to some extent can participate. Especially mobile. Mobile is driving this effort, and it's allowing people to leapfrog and become part of the conversation.
David Kobe is one of the founders of Ushahidi. You can find a link to their website on our website, ttbook.org. While we're talking about information, we've started tweeting. So if you want to look at an upcoming show to keep track of what's on our minds, or to take a peek behind the scenes, follow us on Twitter. I'm Jim Fleming. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.